Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season. Hi, everybody. JT along with Reynolds here in the studio, and you're listening to a special edition of Barbecue Nation. By request this week, we have Aaron Franklin again speaking about his book, A Meat Smoking Manifesto. Everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT. Ever been to Texas? Or are you thinking about going to Texas? Well, if you go there, there's one place that you've got to put on your Texas bucket list. And that's Franklin's Barbecue in Austin. It's really a have to. But don't get there too late. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. But you do not want to arrive late. It's my pleasure to welcome to Barbecue Nation Aaron Franklin, the proprietor of Franklin's in Austin, probably the most famous barbecue place in the world. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, hello.
How are you doing down there?
I'm doing super great.
Well, you've got a new book, or is this your first book, I should ask?
Yes, very much so. There is only one.
Okay, well, I can see why. This is a took a while to do this. I've written a couple of books, and so I empathize with you. But the title of the book is Franklin Barbecue, A Meat Smoking Manifesto. And we'll talk a little bit more about the book a little later in the show, but it is a great book. But what prompted you to do this besides Stacy poking you with a pitchfork or something?
Well, you know, really none of that. You know, just kind of became friends with some people at 10 Speed, became friends with a fellow that has later became my literary agent, if you will, and kind of brokered the whole thing.
Sure.
And everybody's kind of like, hey, if you ever want to do a book, let us know. Hey, you ever think about doing a book? I'm like, nah, it's not really my thing. And then one morning about, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I was cooking ribs at work, and I kind of thought to myself, self, I might like to do a book. So I kind of made a couple calls, and then a year later it came out. It was just super organic and super duper easy, and Jordan McKay wrote it with me, and he did an excellent job. And yeah, we really just wrote the whole thing while working overnight shifts cooking ribs.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you, folks, if you want a kind of an ultimate how-to book, there's not a lot of recipes in it. If you're looking for just a recipe book, this probably isn't it. But if you're looking for a how-to and the background on stuff, that's the book for you. Aaron, how'd you get your start doing barbecue? Is it just something you wanted to do since a small child, like play golf, or did it just come to you?
You know, I guess it turns out I really like to play with fire.
Okay.
Go figure. And I also like food, and, you know, in that subgenre of food, I really like meat. So I guess they all kind of came together pretty easily. My parents had a barbecue joint when I was a kid for a few years in Bryan, Texas, where I grew up. And skip ahead many, many years, I bought an offset cooker like any other good Texan.
Sure.
Bought a brisket at the grocery store, fired it up. It was terrible, and I was hooked.
I understand that. I've spent a lot of time in Texas, and I've actually been to your place.
Oh, super cool.
Yeah, but I don't want to jump ahead on my question line here, but is a brisket the official meat of Texas? Is it the official cut of beef in Texas? I mean, I got
it. Oh, it is for me. I kind of think so.
Everywhere I went, you know, and I've been there, I've probably been to Texas 50 times, and it's always, let's go get some brisket.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, if you're talking about Texas barbecue, it definitely goes towards brisket.
Sure. What's a typical day for Aaron Franklin? I know you work odd hours, so to speak, at times.
Some days I work odd hours, some days I work less, some days I work more. I probably hover around maybe trying to stay under 100 hours a week of actual working. You know, my days could start at midnight. They could start at 4 a.m. They could start at, you know, 6 a.m. Kind of taking care of the restaurant. We do a lot of welding out at the welding shop, starting to work on some barbecue pits. And, you know, we just, there's a show called Barbecue with Franklin on PBS.
Right.
That we wrapped up doing the book stuff. Running the restaurant, cooking a lot of meat, doing events. You know, I stay pretty busy.
When you're preparing stuff for the restaurant, what's that day like? When you're, you know, are you in ribs in, briskets in at midnight or two, or what is that?
Well, so we cook 24 hours a day, and I typically don't do the late night. Mm-hmm. I have a few other people that do that, and that's the brisket cook. So if I do cook, which this is about the first time in the last 5 years that I haven't done it consistently every other day or something like that. So it feels pretty good. I'm feeling pretty well rested these days and actually able to run a restaurant, which is cool. yeah, but if I do that, that day probably starts about 12:30 a.m. for me. Might end around 5 or 6 p.m.
Those are long days.
Those are very long days. The barbecue never stops, and those fires never go out.
I like that, though. I like that. And in the book, a lot of the photographs, you know, there's a lot of food photographs, but there's a lot of photographs of, you know, barbecue pits and stuff that you've made before. And, mm-hmm. I find that very interesting. Most people wouldn't like fess up to that, you know?
The way I figure we're kind of do-it-yourselfers. That's how this whole barbecue thing started. You know, if you want it done right, you kind of have to do it yourself. If you want a barbecue pit to cook the way you want it to cook, you might just have to build it yourself. Cause I don't feel that there are a lot of things on the market necessarily, you know, for the way I like to cook.
Sure.
So, you know, and also just for, you know, cost reasons. I mean, it's a lot better for me just to build our own stuff.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
I like to build things, of course. So
I've noticed that. You're kind of truly a hands-on guy.
I like to build things. I like to fix things. That's kind of my thing.
What's the difference between Central Texas barbecue, because you kind of make an issue of this in the book, and I don't mean a bad issue, and the rest of the state or the rest of the world? And you don't have to go through all 17 different versions of barbecue, but you kind of emphasize that there's a specialty or a special area in Central Texas.
There is. So we're in Central Texas, and that's really more of a German Czech style from immigrants that came into Central Texas, and that's where our sausage style comes from. And that's kind of where our meat market style of serving barbecue comes from also. That's where the butcher paper comes from. You know, that's where mm-hmm. kind of weighing things up comes from. So that's really, you know, the idea is that here in Central Texas is that if you have to put sauce on your meat, it must be pretty bad. And I totally agree with that. If you have sauce, you should make it good, but you shouldn't rely on it for barbecue.
Right.
You know, just because you bought a jar of sauce at the grocery store, threw it on some chicken, doesn't make it barbecue chicken.
No.
You know, so that's kind of how we do in Central Texas. And it's really just, you know, essentially salt, pepper, meat, and fire. And just keep it as simple as you possibly can and cook it as well as you possibly can.
Well, don't forget the beer.
And there's beer involved, of course.
Yeah, there's beer involved.
And most of our beer around here is pretty much German beer anyway. So, yeah, it all fits. It all fits.
Well, see, here in the Portland area, we've got all these microbrews. And I would probably get in trouble for saying this. I'm not a big beer guy. Now, if you want to talk scotch, I can do that with you. But we have, I don't know how many anymore.
You've got a lot. That's
we've got a lot, yeah. But they're really getting into serving barbecue up here, and that they're getting more serious about it in the Portland area. It's not like you say.
Yeah. There's some great barbecue up there. A good friend of mine, Rodney over Pontus Pit, I think that place is super great.
Oh, yeah. We're going to take a break here in just a minute. We're not really going to take a break, but we're going to take a break. and what I want to talk about when we come back is the difference between good smoke and bad smoke. Now, if we were in college, that would be a different subject, but we're not. We're older now, so we won't do that. We're going to be back with more of Barbecue Nation and Aaron Franklin from Franklin's in Austin, which I do think, and I think it's been rated that too, the number one barbecue place in the country.
Somebody said that somewhere along the way, I think.
Yeah, I think somebody said that. Anyway, we're going to be back in just a few minutes on Barbecue Nation. Don't go away.
New York, New York is everything they say, and no place that I'd rather be. Quarter to three. When they play their music, ooh, that modern music. They back it with a lot of style, but it's still
obscene. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation and this special rebroadcast of our interview with Aaron Franklin. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. And we are very fortunate today to have Aaron Franklin from Franklin's in Austin. Tough to get a seat in your place once in a while, like every day, if you're not in line.
Yeah, maybe so. I think we've only got 37 chairs, so yeah, it's not real big.
I had a friend who went to a seminar in Austin, and when he was going down there, I said, hey, why don't you go over to Franklin's? You know, it's a great place. And so he kind of wandered over there, and he said he got there at, like, I don't know, 11:45 or something. He said, I couldn't get in. There wasn't any meat left or whatever. It was so funny.
That might be getting a little late on some days. You know, we cook an awful lot of meat. We really don't run out of meat till about 3 o'clock, 3:30 kind of area. But the people that eat at 3:30 may have gotten there at 10 a.m. So it's kind of one of the tricky little things for us.
So before we went to break, we were going to talk about the difference between good smoke and bad smoke. And you highlight that in your book. And I find that fascinating because Texas has its own indigenous wood. Oregon has its own indigenous wood. You know, different parts of the country obviously have, you know, whatever you want. But you kind of make it an interesting thing, because I think most people, especially if they've got a stick barbecue, if you will, like that, they just throw wood in and go. And yep. you're very succinct about how you build the fire and what wood to put where and that. You want to run us by that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, to get it, so when you say like a clean fire or a dirty fire, you know, obviously if you choke off an air supply to a fire, fire needs oxygen, so if you choke that off, it's going to become kind of sooty, it's going to get more kind of oil-soluble byproducts. It's not going to burn efficiently and cleanly. You know, it's not going to be a complete combustion, you know, pretty much.
Sure.
So really, that's the only thing we do is just, you know, burn a fire the way it wants to burn. I think, you know, in general, kind of my theory on fires is if you put and with anything, really, you know, if you put a piece of wood on a fire, don't make it do something it doesn't want to do naturally. If it wants to burn fast, let it burn fast. If it wants to burn a little bit slower, let it burn a little bit slower. You can't mess with nature, you know.
Right.
Like, you got a piece of wood that's dried out, it's got a certain amount of moisture, or it doesn't, or it's a certain, you know, type of wood, or whatever you're dealing with. Just let it do its thing.
You know, one of the things that I won't say irritates me, but
there's, well, I'm on the phone, so
okay,
know.
All right. There, but you know, there's a big market for they sell these little bags of smoker chips.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody. Not everybody, certain people out there who don't understand, I guess, in my world, that they put them in a bucket of water, and they've got a nice fire going, it's got a nice clean smoke to it, as you're saying, and all of a sudden they're putting these soggy wet chips on it, and yeah, it makes smoke, but...
Well, that's the thing, though, it actually kind of doesn't make smoke, because I think the thing a lot of times that people are thinking about, you know, when they soak firewood or wood chips or mm-hmm. wood chunks or whatever, is the stuff that they're seeing is actually steam.
Right.
And they're actually cooling off their fire through evaporative cooling.
Right.
So it's really, you know, soaking the wood doesn't make a lot of sense for me.
No, I mean, I have some dry wood chips, and sometimes I will actually put those on the fire, not directly in the middle, but on the side, and sometimes they smoke a little bit like that, and you might, you know, get some effect that way. But throwing water on fire... just doesn't ever work for me. I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's kind of one of those things. Water and fire don't necessarily get along really well.
No, I understand completely. You say you have a bumper sticker on your truck that reads, "Brisket is my spirit animal." You want to?
I think I do, actually.
You want to explain that?
And it's a bumper sticker for the show Barbecue with Franklin.
Sure.
It's just, you know, I thought it was neat. I put it on there. That's pretty much it.
No, I think it's great. I love all that kind of stuff. Let's jump over to brisket now. We talked a little bit about it a few minutes ago, but I want to get into it a little more in depth here. Brisket is the animal, if you will, of choice of a lot of people. Brisket is one of the items you, if you're a barbecue competitor, you have to cook a brisket, so on and so on and so on. My guess is, Aaron, excuse me, that there's 95% of the people out there don't know how to cook a brisket. Just, it's a large piece of meat, and they're not used to cooking something that big, first of all.
Well, I think with something that is that big, you know, the obvious thing is that it's expensive.
Right.
Granted, cost is coming down now, but, you know, it's a big piece of meat. It's pretty expensive per pound. You don't want to mess it up. You sure don't want to have to waste it. And you also, you know, want to have a lot of people that you can feed. You don't want to just cook a brisket for two people for dinner. That's not really very good.
No.
You know, so that's kind of the downside of it. But I think the positives on cooking brisket, in my opinion, is just kind of a big, dumb piece of meat. You know, granted, there's two muscles, and it's pretty finicky. There are a ton of details that go into it. But it's pretty easy to get a pretty good brisket.
Yeah.
It might not be quite as easy to get an amazing piece of meat out of it. You know, that certainly takes some practice, I would imagine. But, you know, it's, I feel like ribs are way more tricky than brisket is because it's such a fast cook. I mean, you've got such a smaller window of air.
Sure.
On a big brisket, you know, you're cooking something for 16 hours, 18 hours, 12 hours, whatever. You know, you've got a much larger window of air in there, I feel like. Things aren't moving as fast. You can really just kind of watch it and just kind of get a relationship with it and everything. And, you know, you can have time to think about things.
Well, it's a bit esoteric about brisket, but I guess I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, though.
No, I agree with you. And the reason I said most people don't know how to cook it is they try to cook it too fast. Maybe they don't trim it correctly, which we'll talk about in a second. You know, we've pointed out on this show through some other guests and my own rattling on, don't try to cook a brisket on a gas grill because that's not going to work. That's not going to work out too good for you. But I just think that because I love brisket and I love cooking a good brisket and I love spending the day cooking a nice brisket. But don't think you're going to get it done in an hour or two.
Definitely not. And that's kind of the thing, you know, kind of the point for the book, with there not being very many recipes. I was really pretty hesitant to put any recipes in there at all.
Sure.
Barbecue's not about recipes. It's about poking at something. It's about smelling something. It's about looking at a fire. It's about, you know, picking up a piece of meat and being able to tell if it's tender or not. And that's kind of the thing with brisket, that there is no, like, really, you know, like, set rule for it. There's no, like, you know, an hour a pound, or there's not a, you know,
right,
this temperature. Like, temperatures are different on every cooker. Bottom heat, top heat, airflow, radiant heat, convective heat, all that stuff. How thick is the brisket? How cold was it when you put it on? How much marbling is in there? How much subcutaneous fat is on there? So there's really no actual formula. But that's kind of the great thing about something that takes so long, is that you really kind of have time to think about it. Be like, well, I don't think it's cooking fast enough. Well, the edges are getting a little dried out. Well, I can hear it cooking. It's probably too hot. You know, so you really kind of can kind of learn as you cook it.
Sure.
You know, that being said, when you mess it up, it sure hurts a lot more than it would if you just messed up a steak.
Yeah.
You can cook another steak pretty quick, but might be hard to recover from a bad brisket.
No, it's true. And like you said, it's a big piece of meat. It can get expensive to do it. But when it's good, it is really good. That's,
yeah. In worst case scenario, chop it up and throw some sauce in there.
Yeah, you can. Oh, I think a lot of people do that. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back more with Aaron Franklin on Barbecue Nation after this. Don't go away. Now for more of our interview with Aaron Franklin, talking about his new book, A Meat Smoking Manifesto. That's a catchy title. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation on the Radio Northwest Network and our home station here in Portland, KXL. I'm JT, along with Aaron Franklin today. Aaron's got a new book out, and I don't recommend these things too much, but I'm going to say this is one you should have. It's the Franklin Barbecue, A Meat Smoking Manifesto. I love the word manifesto. It's like, it's there, you know, you got to have this.
Yeah, there it is.
When we were talking in the last segment, we were talking about brisket, of course. Is there a right way and a wrong way to trim brisket, Aaron, for you?
There's a lot of ways. There's the way I like to do it, which I kind of, for me on a personal level, think of it as the right way. But, you know, it really depends on what you want. I mean, back in the day, you know, traditionally brisket, you just, you know, like kind of like historically, well, I shouldn't say historically because, you know, before that we were doing whole animals. But, you know, as boxed meat came about in the, you know, mid-50s
sure.
and stuff, when people actually started only cooking brisket, you know, kind of the idea was that it was a cheap piece of meat. You cooked it, you know, as fast as you could, and I still agree with that, sort of. But, you know, you didn't really do anything to it. You didn't, maybe didn't salt and pepper it. You maybe didn't put anything on it. You just threw it on fire with no trimming and just kind of, you know, a real kind of East Texas-y way. And the way I grew up doing it is that you would take the back of a knife and just slide off all the fat. Like, what? That's the good part. Like, what are you doing? So then that gets us into trimming brisket a little bit. If you want, like, a better finished product, you kind of need to think about what you need to do to get there. I guess kind of, you know, think about what you want and then just kind of reverse engineer it to what do you need to do to get there.
Sure.
You know, so that lands us into trimming briskets. And, you know, if we're cooking 100 briskets at the restaurant, we don't want a bunch of them that are all different sizes. We don't do growth hormones or any of that kind of stuff. So
sure.
they vary in size greatly. Some are thick, some are thin. You know, they're completely different. Each animal is totally, totally different. So that's kind of a way for us to trim them all to about the same size. And if you're making sausage, great. You know, you have scraps for that. If not, then it's certainly pretty wasteful. But really, if you only want a quarter inch of fat in the finished product, you're probably going to have to trim some off. So that's kind of how we landed on that. And I kind of think that's the, I guess, my right way to do it.
Okay. Well, it sounds good. Excuse me. You talk in the book, and this is something that I had only heard once before, actually. You talk about the stall. And I found that very fascinating. I mean, to me, it was just one of the, I didn't even know what to call it, but I've known about it forever. But the stall, in dealing with the temperature and stuff in the meat, you want to enlighten our listeners on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got a huge, and it happens with, you know, a pot roast, or it happens with a huge ham, or anything large, pretty much, it might be noticeable. But pretty much as the muscle's cooking, it's tightening up. And eventually it starts to get really, really just kind of tightens up and it squeezes out a lot of moisture. And what's happening there, called the stall, is that, you know, it squeezes out moisture and it starts to sweat in theory. So, again, through evaporative cooling, it cools off and it kind of has a hard time regaining that. So if you're looking at the temperature curve on it, like a brisket may get up to about, you know, somewhere around the 160 range, you know, depending on what's going on and how fast it's going momentum-wise. You know, it'll kind of go, and then you might see it kind of back off, and it'll kind of cool off a little bit, and it'll kind of hover in that temperature range for a while. And then finally, after that, the muscles start to break down, start to reabsorb some moisture, and then it really starts to cook a lot faster at that point. But, you know, I mean, I know the first couple times I cooked a brisket and actually put a probe in there, I was like, oh, my God, what's going on? What's going on? How can it get cooler? This can't be. And then I started kind of thinking about it, and, of course it makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Well, I think people at home, if they've never heard that, they should look it up or get your book. I'm not here. I want to tell people about your book, but I'm not hawking your book for you. I want to make that clear. But I just think it's there's so much good information in this for people, and especially people that don't do this type of thing all the time. I mean, I cook outside year round and several times a week, so that's a good thing for me. But pretty fascinating stuff. Let's smoke ring is that's one of those things where I think people's own preferences come into play a little bit, at least in my theory. Is it some people like a larger smoke ring? I have friends who they like it that there's very little non-pink meat showing, if you allow me that. You know, they like it
yeah.
really heavy, and other people like it very light. What do you do at Franklin's there?
I could care less about the smoke ring. You know,
okay.
Smoke ring does absolutely nothing for flavor. Taste, it just doesn't taste any different than normal meat. You know, and it is just a chemical reaction that happens between a real combustion. You could theoretically get one on a gas oven if you really wanted to.
Sure.
There are some ways to cheat that, but I think the smoke ring thing really comes up where people have maybe an overinflated value of a smoke ring, and I think that probably stems, I would guess, and I'm going out on a limb here, no, you know, tree puns intended, but, you know, for a presentation kind of thing, for a competition barbecue, you know, that's something that the competition stuff is kind of trained to look at it like, oh, it's got a great smoke ring, or it looks neat, but really, it doesn't mean anything. If you're cooking it the right way, you're going to have one. It's unavoidable. There's some ways to increase it and decrease it naturally. There's some really fake ways to get one, too, if you wanted to use chemicals and stuff. But really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. If you're cooking over fire, you're probably going to have at least a small smoke ring. That's totally nothing we pay attention to at the restaurant.
Now, you cook your briskets and your, I don't know, if you cook your other meats in paper, too, or just your briskets?
Just the briskets.
Yeah. And is that just something that, because some people don't do that. I know the connoisseurs and the aficionados, you, Steve Reichlin, some of those people, they all, you know, want you to do it in paper. I've done it in paper. I like that. But a lot of folks at home maybe aren't comfortable with that. They think the stuff might burn up on them.
Well, if you're cooking hot enough to burn up that piece of paper, you probably can't eat the meat anyway.
That's true. That's true.
You know, that's kind of what I think about it. But, yeah, I think paper's okay. I mean, I sure obviously don't have a problem with it. If I was going to cook just one brisket for home use, I would probably not wrap it at all. But at the restaurant, if we're cooking 100, you know, we don't want a bunch of naked briskets running around, so we're going to cover them up with something.
You
so
bet.
We can stack them up in the warmer for lunch and kind of control them a little bit better. We don't use foil. I think foil is just a little too steamy, a little too pot roasty for my taste, a little too soggy on the bark. So I think paper is kind of a happy medium.
There you go. Quick question here also. Do you think that people that use liquid smoke should be flogged?
Oh, boy. I better not answer that one. Might get myself in trouble.
Well, I'll answer it for you because that's what I think. I don't think... you know, not to insult anybody's product or anything, but...
No, I smell what you're stepping in for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
And it smells like liquid smoke.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it kind of tastes that way, too. Real quick, I did a... I judged one of the local barbecue contests here one time here in Portland. And very nice presentation by all the competitors, all that. There was like 8 or 10 of them. And when they brought up the sample from this one and they opened up they bring it up in a little styrofoam thing, you know, and they open it up and you could smell the liquid smoke. Nobody would even taste it. The other judges.
Wow.
And I wouldn't either because it was just so, it was so prominent and so rancid, but it's just like, no, take it out. It was just,
you know, I think there's a grandma somewhere that would certainly have my blessing if she was doing a weird brisket in an oven to use liquid smoke. But outside of that scenario, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. It's weird to put chemicals on something.
Oh, no, it is. It is. It is. We're going to take a break here. We'd like to thank Aaron Franklin from Franklin's Barbecue in Austin, Texas. We're going to continue this discussion next week on Barbecue Nation with Aaron. But coming up next, we've got Colton Hintig from GrillLight.com. Remember the guys with the flashlights and the spatulas and stuff? That's him. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I nursed him till the danger passed. The days went by, he mended fast. And then from dawn till setting sun, he practiced with that deadly gun. And hour on hour, I watched in awe. No human being could match the draw of Ringo.
Ringo. Ringo.
One day we...
Hey everybody, JT, and I hope you're enjoying your summer barbecue. Here's our final segment. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. What a lovely day outside. It is summertime. It's supposed to be summertime, and it's supposed to be warm, but it's not killing us today like it had been the last couple weeks. We've got Colton. Want me to try that last name again?
Go for it.
Kintig? That's better.
There you go. Yeah, okay. It's getting there.
It's getting there. He's the co-founder of Grill Light. We had him on the show last week, and we're going to talk to him again real quick about this. You said you had some new products in development. I'm interested about your grilling mat.
Okay.
Are you actually putting lights in the mat?
No, it's just kind of an addition to the Grill Light line. Something to kind of make grilling easier, you know, a little bit less messy. These grill mats are, it's a silicone-based thin mat, you lay it directly on the grill surface. They're heat safe up to about 700, 750 degrees, and you can cook on top of it. So you can do veggies, you can do chicken with barbecue sauce, and it won't fall through the cracks in the grill. So it's kind of a cool little new product we're working on right now.
And it won't burn up?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Similar to that, so, and it's wonderful to cook with. It's nothing falls through, and it cooks it well, and it holds the juices, too.
That's why it's hard to make, like, cooked beans on the grill, because they fall through. That's,
yeah,
you know that.
Exactly. Yeah. You can do veggies, put some butter directly on it, and just really cook it right there directly on the grill. You don't have to worry about using a veggie basket or anything like that. Those are kind of hard to use and a little bit messy sometimes. So,
well, see, I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy, because I'm old, but I'm not that old. But anyway, like, one of the things we were going to talk about in the show was I love to cook asparagus on the grill. And Andy, you know that because mm-hmm. I've done it for you at your place a few times.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And, I chop off the bad end of the asparagus. I don't use any asparagus that's any bigger around than my little finger because they get like tree stalks. So I'm interested in how this grill mat would work because I like to grill them. And I use, slight oil on them, olive oil, or I can use water if you want, but olive oil is a little better on them. Just spray them real lightly. But then I use orange juice at the end with garlic and gives them a nice flavor on that. So would this mat be something appropriate for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned asparagus because that's what I use it for quite a bit. So when I do asparagus, I put, a couple pads of butter directly on the grill mat, put a handful of asparagus, of course, with the bad parts chopped off, and just kind of saute it. It really turns your grill into almost like a griddle or a grill pan like that.
Sure.
So, it's good for the grill marks still come through it too. So if you're trying to put grill marks on steak, it'll still work for that too.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. Now, people can get these at their local barbecue stores. Do they need to go to your website, which is grilllight.com, and they can buy directly from you, or how's this work?
Probably the most convenient would be grilllight.com. We're also on amazon.com.
Okay.
And that's grilllight with two L's. We've got all of our products up there to showcase. So,
very, very, very cool. So what's your, out of all your products there, what's your favorite one that you've developed? I mean, what's the one that you're the most proud of?
I'd have to say our tongs are probably my favorite. That really took a lot of time and a lot of engineering to go into those. We had to engineer the hinge around our flashlight. So it was a little bit awkward at first, but we finally got it figured out. And they have a cool little, we call it gravity lock. It's a one-handed locking mechanism. You just stick them up, point them in the air to unlock the tongs, and then point them down at the ground, and it locks them back together. So it's pretty handy.
So are you just a crazed inventor? Is that what you are? I mean, besides a barbecue guy, but I mean, you just like, sit around and think stuff up, or
mad
what?
Scientist.
Mad scientist in the
I guess so. I kind of sit with my lab coat, I'm a problem solver. I always think of kind of easier and more simplified ways to solve problems. The act of creating Grilllight and selling it as a product is just whenever I realize that hey, a lot of people have this problem and maybe they would appreciate it too. So kind of stumbled into it.
Well, it seems to me like you've done a good job with that, coming up with these products. Innovation is great. Sometimes innovation gets a little off the reservation, so to speak, because, but I think this is cool stuff. What do you think, Andy?
Oh, yeah. I'd actually be very interested in looking into this. This looks like something I might want to carry.
Yeah. Andy's got a barbecue store. Colton, we've got to run. Buddy, thanks for being with us again this week, and we appreciate it, and good luck out
there.
Thanks so much. I'm going to tell everybody how to get to your website and stuff, and I'll post it on the Barbecue Nation, so okay?
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care, Cole.
Take care. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Barbecue Nation. I'd like to also thank real quick a couple of our affiliates down the line, KWRO in Coos Bay and KFLS in Klamath Falls. Don't forget, you can email us at barbecuenation@kxl.com, also recipes@kxl.com. Until next time, I'm JT. Keep your hands out of the fire. Keep in your pockets or around a cold beer. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Barbecue Nation this week. Reynolds and I will be back next week with another edition of Barbecue Nation. Open up the door and let the good time ring. Tomorrow's gonna be